From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 16th day of January, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason, glad to be back home and in the saddle here on the CMR. In just a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. And then later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Along the way, Dave Dickey will have the agricultural news for the day. I'll bring you a feature story and tell you just a little bit about my travels over the last week and a half as I made my way across the state of Illinois with the Corn and Soybean Classic Series. And it all comes up right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report, of course, is a production of WILL. It's public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on a Friday afternoon. March wheat futures at 578 and a quarter, up 9.5 cents today. The May at 590 and three quarters, 9.25 higher. July at 602 and a quarter, up 9.5. March corn futures rallied 25 and three quarters of a cent to $3.91 on their settlement. May at 401 and three quarters, up 25.5. July 412 and a half, up 26. And September corn, 423 and a quarter, up 26 and a quarter. December contract at 436 and three quarters for the new crop, up 25 and three quarters for the day. March soybean futures, $10.20, up 25 and a half. The May at 1029, up 25 and three quarters. July 1038 and a half, up 25 and a quarter. And August at 1032, up 22 and a half. But the November's gained half that much to settle 11 and a half cents higher at $9.72 for the afternoon. March bean meal at $3.16, up $11. March bean oil at $34.59, up 19 cents. CME Group live cattle, 84.52 and a half for the Feb contract, 17 and a half cents higher. April at 86, or rather 87, 67 and a half. Up 37.5, and the feeders finished the January's, well, they didn't trade, unchanged on the day. March contract 94.37.5, up 7.5 cents for the day for the feeder cattle. Lean hogs finished the February contract at 59.95, up 12.5 cents, and the April futures at $66.02.5, finished 17.5 cents higher on this Friday afternoon. We'll talk more about these numbers with Mike Zuzulo in just a couple of minutes here. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. February crude oil futures at $36.51 are up $1.11. The March contract at $42.57 a barrel, up 97 cents. Ethanol at $1.61, up 6 4/10 for the day. February natural gas at $4.79 7/10, down 4 6/10. And the RBOB gasoline at $1.16 5, just about 9 10ths of a cent lower. Heating oil futures, February contract $1.47 3/10, down 1 4/10. Feb propane at $75 2/10. A penny and 7 tenths lower. Gold futures, January contract, $839.30 an ounce, up $32.60 today. The Dow now stands at 82.52. That's just about 38 points higher on the afternoon. The U.S. dollar is off 55 at 83.95. And the CRB index for the day at 221.30 is up 2.39 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-stage region looks like in northern and western Illinois. Should be partly to mostly cloudy this evening. Some flurries and snow showers should arrive overnight in the north. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy. Lows will range from 4 below zero in northeastern Indiana to 12 in the western part of Illinois. Tomorrow in the north, mostly cloudy, some snow, possibly mixed with freezing rain in northwestern Illinois. In central Indiana, mostly cloudy, a chance for snow showers during the afternoon. Elsewhere, partly sunny. Highs tomorrow will range from 22 in northeastern Indiana to 44 in the southwestern part of Illinois. The extended forecast as the storm system will bring light to moderate snowfall to northern Illinois and much of Indiana this weekend. Another system will follow a similar track around the middle of next week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzulo joins us from his Lafayette, Indiana office. He's with Risk Management Commodities, and he's here to talk about the week and the day trade. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hi, Todd. Did you keep all your fingers and toes on the cold weather tour?
I've got a good story. I've got to go through this. Yesterday afternoon, we were packing up the vehicles at the end of the day. We weren't quite done. It was about, 2:30 or so. And we broke the back end window out of the Excursion.
That'll happen in those kind of temperatures.
Oh my gosh, I was glad I was not riding in that vehicle on the way home. I didn't hear how cold that was. We were in the Calver near there at Malta, and they took it to the research farm and finished dropping that window out. And I don't know what they put there, probably plastic and cardboard and everything else. It either was loud and windy and really cold, or they did a good job. Hopefully they did a good job. And the entomologists who were in there were a couple of them, didn't manage to freeze on the way home, and a few others. So I was just happy that it was all done, and I wasn't riding in that particular vehicle.
That's what you're really happy about.
I don't care. It's a better story because I'm not in it. So, hey, I was looking at the trade for the week, and there's some interesting things that happened. I was following, of course, with updates all week long as we were talking to the producers and the agribusiness folks what was happening in Chicago. But what I didn't realize, because I used the Farm Bureau's numbers on my phone, and it only goes out 5 contracts, and I couldn't see the November contract in the beans. And I didn't realize that there was such a differentiation between these two and the nearby and the deferred. For instance, on the week, the March contract was down 16. If you go on the expiration, it was 17.5 lower. But the November contract, off 57.5 cents for the week.
Yeah.
So there's been some real readjustment there, not only in the grains floor, but also in the beans. And the beans are readjusting old crop and new crop prices.
Yeah, I think the bull spreading really, really started to take over right after the report numbers came out, and I think they were magnified in the July-Nov bean spread, especially once the weather forecast started to firm up in the middle part of the week. And it just seemed like all week long, except for today, the beans were on the hunt to rally against the corn, especially in the front end. And I suspect that goes back to the report that even though we do have a 200 million bushel carryover in the and a little over that in the old crop beans, we don't have a 1.8 billion bushel like we do in the corn. And the trade continues to see just dismal export sales for the week on corn and to a lesser degree wheat. So I think that's where your bean exports had a lot of China buying this week, Todd, and they had 50 million bushels on the weekly sales. And so it looked like to us the front end really led from a demand standpoint. The fear of tighter supplies coming out of South America helped also in a big way as we approach the end of the week. I have to say, today was the first day all week that up until this price action today where the corn actually led in percentage terms to the upside, it was about the first day of the whole week that either Chuck or I or Sherman or Merrill or Bill hadn't taken a call of clients saying they're going to more beans because of the price action and, just the disappointment after the report. So I was very happy to see the corn gain back some of its luster here on the final day of trade.
Yeah, fundamentally, USDA really changed things for corn on Monday. Darrell Good, this was an interesting as well. The previous week we were out on the corn and soybean classic, and Darrell was talking about needing 2.7 million more acres just on the sheer data side of it to meet demand based off the USDA numbers. Mm-hmm. And Monday morning when they changed those numbers and the carryout and the usage figures, you dropped that. You got rid of all of that, and you needed, according to him, 0.3 million less. And fundamentally, things just really changed, and there was a shift that the producers and the folks in agriculture and the commodity markets really had to get used to.
And that's not even including the reduced hard red, soft red acreage mix that is naturally going to bring more milo and corn into the mix. Beans also, and also, we're running a little bit over 11 million acres on our cotton number, and I am unfortunately thinking that we're going to have to drop that because a lot of the polls, and the American Farm Bureau put out a poll earlier this week, and they were down in that 8.5-9 million acre level, and I can totally understand that at this stage of the game with where the prices are and how bad the cotton exports have been. So you've got a lot of southern belt acres of Milo corn beans, a lot of hard red and soft red acres of corn and beans that, you know, you could really argue at this point you don't need an acreage battle. And I would say not just from the supply side and what the report did on the acres and the corn ending stocks, but also we're starting to get a lot weaker in the outside markets. And although the bailout today of Bank of America and Citigroup helped break the bonds and break the dollar back, the sub-index for the banking sector that we watch on the S&P 500, it's hit a new 8- to 10-year low here today, and it just shows us how weak the global banking industry is. And when you don't have the banks on your side, it's a very bad forward-looking indicator for demand, because without credit and financing, companies and consumers just can't grow and spend, and therefore demand and profits suffer. So we're more nervous about the medium term, especially the demand side of the equation.
Well, putting that back together with the acreage figures just a bit, there were, what, since 06, about 9 million extra acres that have been found in the U.S.
Right.
That were not being used. Those are just extra acres. And there were something like, what, 4.2 million winter wheat acres that were not put in the ground. A lot of those, I think, were soft red. And
they were.
And a bunch of them came out of Arkansas, which can go beans, cotton, rice, and I don't know, I guess...
Even corn.
And
yep.
So if they're not going to be in cotton and they're not going to be in, and they can't be in wheat at this point, then that leaves beans, rice, and corn. What do you think? Or
well,
they just lay them out?
Tying that all together with today's activity and what's going on the supply side in South America, I think you've pretty much given a very good perspective of how you want to, in our opinion, want to trade this market and hedge this market, in that this rally right now that's being led by the supply side fundamentals in Argentina and Brazil is a place to get some hedges in place for 09, because we do have a big supply side issue coming down the road like we're talking about. If we're right about the banking sector and the financial sector not being much better than the last 4 months when the TARP was announced, then you've got a demand issue that's not going to go away anytime soon. So we're really wanting to concentrate and focus at 990 on November beans, for instance, to really start pushing the 09 hedges and beans again, because we do see the acres and beans going up. And, yes, we'll have trimmed the supply side in the near term on the Argentinian and Brazilian weather, we think, but still that doesn't mean you need to be at 990 next fall in November beans. So I think that's how you kind of tie what we're talking to about together with what happened late in this week.
Okay, anything else to let us know before I let you go?
Glad you made a safe trip. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you too. Thanks, Mike.
Okay.
Mike Zuzalo is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Dave Dickey is here now with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, Vera Sun Energy Corporation will auction off the 7 former U.S. bioenergy plants it owns as a condition of receiving $25.2 million in debtor-in-possession financing to keep the plants in hot idle until April 30th. VeraSun Corporate Communications Manager Michael Lockram says the auction will take place as a condition set by DIP lender AgStar Financial Services. An ethanol plant is not producing when it is in hot idle. The House of Representatives is proposing a bill that would give grants rather than tax credits to solar and wind projects. The grant program is meant to address the collapse of the market for renewable energy tax credits. The new grant program, which will be administered by the Department of Energy, is part of House economic stimulus legislation announced Thursday, details of which are still emerging. Soybean revenue assurance claims topped a record $1 billion for the first time in 2008, driven up by the nosedive crop futures prices took prior to last year's harvest. Corn claims also hit record levels for the year, according to USDA's Risk Management Agency. Corn claims totaled $812.7 million, and they were up 60% over 2007. Verenium Corporation announced plans to build its first commercial-scale cellulosic ethanol plant in Highlands County, Florida. The technology developed by Massachusetts-based Verenium will have the ability to make ethanol using a wide range of products, from rice straw and corn stover to wheat straw and rice hulls, to wood pulp to switchgrass, to other types of wood and sawmill and pulp wastes, and a variety of urban wastes. The plant will be constructed on fallow land and is expected to produce up to 36 million gallons of cellulosic ethanol per year. And a group of farmers blocked a main Argentina highway on Thursday, protesting the government's agricultural policy a day after the president unveiled several measures to help the sector. The measures included subsidized loans for farm machinery and price accords on fertilizer and pesticides. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, along with the Corn and Soybean Classic Series that we just finished up across the state of Illinois over the last 2 weeks. Our thanks to all those that came out to Mount Vernon, Springfield, Champaign, Bloomington, Malta, and Moline over the last couple of weeks. Just about 1,140 farmers and retailers and consultants and chem reps and seed reps of all types, and we sure do appreciate the fact that they came out and listened to the crop scientist and the ag economist from Extension here on this campus. We asked them to grade us, and you know what? It was a very high grade. In fact, it averaged an A all the way across the state of Illinois. We sure do appreciate that, too. Thanks much. If you missed it, you can look forward again to next January when we'll be back out with our 13th annual Corn and Soybean Classic Series of meetings. Now, up next, the U.S. EPA has completed a reassessment of the hypoxia zone in the northern Gulf of Mexico. I'll have more on the findings and how they relate to the Corn Belt. The hypoxic zone in the northern Gulf of Mexico has been documented since 1985. It's an area fed with a nutrient load from the Mississippi River. The nutrients cause an algal bloom, which limits the amount of dissolved oxygen in the water. It cannot support most marine life. U.S. EPA asked the Science Advisory Board in 2006 to review all the documentation of the zone, evaluate it against the latest science, and to make recommendations for reducing its size. The board convened 21 experts to take on the task, including Mark David from the Agricultural College at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. He says the task force confirms the nutrient load feeding the algae bloom comes primarily from the Mississippi River Basin.
What we found was we reaffirmed what was previously known, and that is that the nutrient, that nitrogen is the primary nutrient that causes the problem, but we also found that phosphorus is also a contributing nutrient.
So the Science Advisory Board says the Corn Belt is the primary source of nitrogen feeding the hypoxic zone in the northern Gulf of Mexico, and that phosphorus is coming along with that nitrogen.
Once you have so much nitrogen, then the phosphorus can become limiting. The other thing I want to add about phosphorus, though, phosphorus brings into management the sewage treatment plants, because phosphorus, we calculated about a third of the phosphorus that goes down the river comes from sewage treatment. So in that case, it's two-thirds maybe agriculture, one-third effluent.
That one-third, two-third statement can also be applied to the hypoxic zone, which last year covered about 7,900 square miles from the mouth of the Mississippi River to the coastal waters of Texas. The Science Advisory Board suggests the aim should be to reduce its size by two-thirds, and it has a voluntary plan of action.
Basically, that there's no simple answer, that corn and soybean as a management system is very leaky, and that there's just no one thing that we can do that will fix it. We came up with a whole range of management options, from perennial crops being the most ideal thing, but that's not likely to happen, and that there's all kinds of other things, less fall application of N to cover crops, to alternate crops, all could work.
U.S. EPA plans to reassess nitrogen and phosphorus load reductions and the response of the hypoxic zone in 2013. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Time to check in on the cash grain market. Bruce Boster of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, joins us. He's the general manager of the company's 10 Central Illinois grain elevators. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
You guys haven't updated from 10 to a bigger number yet, have you?
No. Nope.
Okay. Well, sometimes.
You never know. Life can be a moving target.
It can be. Sometimes you add a few elevators, and I don't know about it.
If they did, nobody told me about it. So.
Well, if they didn't, that might be a bad sign for you. Hey, let's talk about cash grain market, how things have been challenging over the last couple of weeks. I know there was a time when you probably purchased a lot of corn not too long ago, and then we had quite a drop until today in that marketplace. How do you see it?
Oh, the spike today, we bought a little bit. We hit some offers. Flat prices never got back above the magic $4 number on corn. I mean, the first we spiked above four twice. First time we bought some, we accumulated a lot of offers. We got back there again and bought a lot more. Today has been quieter. Soybeans, we broke back above $10 and bought a fair chunk of beans today.
Hmm. And then how are things logistically within the system?
Logistically difficult. Not surprising that, you know, we saw some pretty decent truck movement when roads froze up, but the weather still wasn't atrociously cold the last two or three days. Things have just stopped. I don't know if we've dumped a truck the last day, which is really a rarity. So I think that if we get into next week window where we're back below freezing for highs but still in the 20s, something like that, we'll see cash movement picking up or actual deliveries picking up again. Now, the river has really been messed up. You put weather like this onto the Illinois River, and loading really grinds to a halt. Barge freight moved from 425% of tariff a week ago to 550%. So that's a, you know, a pretty good move. That's like 16 cents a bushel just in the freight increase there in the last week.
And that on top of what I assume is still pretty slow, a slow look at the economy around the globe probably is causing some serious slowdowns in
exports are just atrocious. What, 8.5 million bushels sold yesterday for sales. The 10-week average has been 17.6 million. And keep that in mind or in for perspective here, 27.4 is the weekly average we need to get the new smaller USDA projection.
Anything else to add before I get the numbers for you?
Nothing major.
All right, and your numbers for the
day? We are at 371 for January and 1002 on the beans.
Thanks much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is the general manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens every Friday afternoon. Stay with us. In just 2 minutes, we'll talk about the weather forecast with climatologist Steve Hilberg.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Impeached Governor Ral Blagojevich's former chief fundraiser has admitted he illegally used corporate funds to pay gambling debts and personal expenses. Christopher Kelly also pleaded guilty today to illegally structuring financial transactions in an effort to hide them from the federal government. The indictment against him didn't touch on politics. Kelly's a roofing contractor and consultant. He helped to raise millions of dollars for Blagojevich's campaigns, and he could give federal prosecutors an inside look at the workings of the governor's administration. The governor still has his job, but it's Lieutenant Governor Pat Quinn who's meeting with the state's other top elected leaders. When Quinn was in Springfield for lawmakers swearing in earlier this week, he invited the other top constitutional officers to his office to talk. Attorney General Lisa Madigan, Comptroller Dan Hines, and Treasurer Alexei Janulius were there. Secretary of State Jesse White couldn't make it because of another commitment. Quinn said today the meeting lasted about 20 minutes and was about the state of affairs of Illinois. He says they talked about the state's financial problems. Quinn says they all agree they want to stay in close communication with each other during a tough time for the state. An agreement in court may speed the reopening of Neal Street in Champaign. A downtown portion has been blocked out of fear for the structural integrity of a building next to the former Metropolitan Building, which burned down last November. The street closures hurt nearby retailers. The hang-up is over the owner's insurance companies wanting to get into the building to try to find a cause. But today, the city and owners agreed to allow an inspection late next week. The city hopes demolition will begin soon after. Champaign had tried to get a court to order the demolition. Champaign County's nursing home has been in the black for two straight months now, but a consultant credits an increase in the number of residents for that turnaround. Mike Scavato says there's also a solid effort to attract people to the facility. The home has been losing about $100,000 each month on a regular basis, but it reported modest gains of around $30,000 to $40,000 last fall, and the December financial figures also look promising. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Time to check in on what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather. Steve Hilberg is here. He's with Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's been cold. Really, really, really cold.
Yeah, it has. I was looking back, and of course, a lot of the records that were set this morning are tied, actually date back to, some of them date back to 1977 when we started, had the second of our, three consecutive bad winters here in Illinois and much of the Midwest. So that tells you how long it's been since we've really been this cold. And, temperatures are actually rather remarkable. A number of locations in Illinois reporting lows, less than minus 30 this morning, including Aurora, Dixon, and Polo. Back in Iowa, we were seeing, low temperatures 35 to 40. We actually had one that was 40 below zero this morning. Of course, in Minnesota, a couple of locations up, in the, Arrowhead there, St. Louis County, Minnesota, had four consecutive days of, minimum temperatures less than minus 40. In fact, Babbitt, Minnesota hit minus 48 the other morning. So we haven't seen this kind of cold in, at a very minimum, about 15 years, and in some cases not for 30 years. So pretty remarkable.
How did it set up?
Well, we've had, pretty much all winter, we've had a pattern that looked very much similar to some of the winters back in 79. We've had this cold, low-pressure system aloft over, basically spinning over Hudson's Bay, more or less. And we've had cold air getting bottled up in the Yukon and the Arctic and over Alaska. And the pattern just was set up such that this low moved into position, a ridge built up in the west, and basically that opened the floodgates to the Arctic for the air to come south. And it's been bottled up there for a while now, and we've been getting little pieces of it here and there, but this is the first big outbreak we've had. And that clipper system that came through the other day and gave us several inches of snow was sort of the system that kicked the door open and let all the cold air get south. So it's been pretty temperatures, like I said, have been pretty remarkable. We haven't seen this in a long time.
Yeah, well, we've got it kicked open. Looks like we've got a reprieve in place coming. Will we get cold again?
Well, it does look like we'll get another shot of Arctic air, another Arctic outbreak, maybe next weekend into the early part of the following week. That won't be as brutal as this one was. Doesn't look like it'll be anywhere near as cold, but it will certainly set things back a bit. We should moderate this week. Warm is all relative at this point, of course. And we'll see temperatures getting back close to normal for this week, especially Tuesday, Wednesday, and into Thursday. But there does look like another weather system that will develop along the edge of the cold air, and that's what will be fueled and bringing in some precipitation next weekend. But we'll get a couple of days of milder weather.
Okay, thanks much.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on Friday afternoons. Thanks for being with us. Don't forget to listen to Commodity Week. We'll record it this afternoon at 4:30, posted to our website by about 6 o'clock at willag.org. And you can always listen to some of the futures markets if you can't get to the web at 217-333-3434. I'm Todd Gleason.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area.